Do not steal my horned frogs, Bear. Don't you dare do it. Don't do it.
I already got him at 20 to 1 to win the Big
12. What they were? Well, they saw you walk into the window. He said, better adjust the price. Let's go. Hello, welcome to Always College Football. Today is Wednesday, July 27th. We hope you're enjoying the show here, wherever it is you're consuming it, whether it's on Apple Podcast, on Spotify, or if you're here with us on the ESPN YouTube channel. We really appreciate you joining. Rate, like, subscribe, you name it. Interact with us via the comments. We look forward to interacting. We look forward to catering the show to your needs here in the days and weeks to come. We have a great show lined up for you today. We're going to dive into some of the Vegas win totals. That's right. Chris the Bear Felica will join the show. He's going to be a big part of the show here in the weeks and months to come, helping us break down the games and the matchups week in and week out. But hey, our preseason preview, let's dial into some of these win totals and look at some key numbers for some of the best teams in college football. And we're going to dive into the mailbag. Haven't had many opportunities to do that, but we got your questions lined up. So we look forward to interacting with you. We're going to head to Aggieland. We might even dive into the Sooners, might even hit the Badgers. Who knows? Maybe we hit Notre Dame as well. We'll see what comes via the mailbag. So let's not waste any time. Let's write down to it. Let's get to Chris the Bear Felica.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, welcome in Chris the Bear Felica now to Always College Football. Bear will be with us weekly, as far as I understand, throughout the course of this season. But today, Bear, we're going to dial into some, I guess, some preseason win totals, if you're good with that. How does that sound?
It sounds terrific. I think I may have fired in one or two or three or four or five or six or so so far, trying to get ahead of the game and get some good early numbers. No, good to be with you, and happy to be season's getting close, man. It's great.
It is, man. This, I feel like when the win totals come out, that's kind of whets the appetite early. And that was months ago. And now here we are, and we're just a few weeks away. So we're very much looking forward to some of the action. You'll join us on Fridays throughout the course of the season to help preview some of the games coming up for the Saturdays and Friday night action that we'll have throughout the course of it. But I want to ask you first, before we get into some of these specific team bets that you've already made and the ones that you've kind of highlighted, do you have a theory on how much juice to lay, what you should avoid? Say you have a team at minus 185 on the over, plus 150 on the under. Do you ever just kind of shy away because of a number?
No, I don't. I'm actually glad you asked that question, because this is one of the things that I feel strongly about. And I know I may be in the minority and other people may have differing opinions. But for example, I'm glad you brought this up. Like, there are two teams that I played over their season win total, and I'm laying more juice because I got a better number. Like, I would much rather, in the instances I'm talking about, Ohio State and Georgia, I both played them over 10.5 wins. Now, I'm laying 205, 210 on the over, but at the same time, I think the half a game is much more valuable than laying the extra juice. Like, there's a better chance that I'd rather have the opportunity to win on 11-1 than push at 11-1 and say, oh, if they go 10-2, I'm only going to lose minus 140. Whereas if they go 10-2, I'm going to lose greater than that. But I think the chance of both Georgia and Ohio State going 10-2 are slim. So I would rather have 11 as a win than 11 as a push at a better number.
Well, and I mean, I guess when you take a look at it, Ohio State, let's use them as an example. Final two games of the year should be a pretty fairly significant favorite, mm-hmm. whether it's at Maryland, probably 15, 16, 17 and a half points. And then you get Michigan in the final week of the season. You can almost hedge it and get plus money betting on the underdog as a money line play. And then you can create value on either side of the coin if, in fact, you're trying to figure out a way out of that bet and maybe find a little extra money.
No, you're right. And there are ways to do that throughout the season as well. If you look at someone's schedule and you say, okay, the only games that I can really see them losing are X and Y, there's an opportunity, even if the games aren't the last two games in the season. Like that's why I think if you have that wiggle room and 11 wins or that half a game better, whatever the number is, you're putting yourself in a much better position than getting that 11 flat number.
Love that. I think that you're always finding value. You can just carve away some value at all times if you're Chris the Bear Flick. That's why he's a sharp. Bear, when you look at some teams, for instance, Alabama, using them as an example, are there any teams like Bama or Ohio State or, you know, Clemson, I guess, that you would just say, I'm not betting the under regardless of where the number's at? Are there any teams that are just pure bona fide stayaways for you?
Well, I always hate when you see an 11 or you see an 11 and a half. That is troubling to me because that means a team has to be perfect. And it's very rare you can see a team go 12-0 in the regular season. And that's a lot of pressure. Like knowing every week, if you lose once, you can't win. And I have a hard time playing those 11 and 11 and a half with where you have to go 12-0 to win. But in terms of attaching like a name to a number like that, no, it's more just about the number and the opportunity to win.
What about the coaching staffs? For instance, USC with Lincoln Riley, they have an inflated number. Oklahoma, maybe a slightly deflated number when looking at where they're at 9.5. That's where they, you know, that's far below where they've been in recent years. So is there, how do you handle first year head coaches when kind of assessing the landscape on some win totals?
I think in a lot of instances, people handicap first year head coaches as an improvement. And it's logical. It makes sense. That's why the school is bringing in a new coach because they think the team will be better. But often there are instances where the reason the head coach is being brought in is because the team isn't very good and the coach may have to weed some people out and the team is going to be potentially worse than what they were a year ago. And you mentioned Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is a team that I did play under 9.5. And it's not because I don't think Brent Venables isn't going to be a good head coach. It's because you look at Oklahoma's schedule, and there have been some Oklahoma fans who are like, oh, there's no way they don't win 10 games. And where are they going to lose? And I'm like, where are they going to lose? Texas, Oklahoma State, Baylor, Iowa State, Nebraska, Kansas State. Like, take your pick. Like, even with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams last year, no team in the country won more games decided by a touchdown or less than Oklahoma. Like, are they going to do that again with a roster that, yes, I know the Dylan Gabriel, Jeff Levy connection going back to UCF, but you lose a majority of your playmakers. You lose almost your entire defense. It's a team that won a bunch of close games last. Are you going to do that again? And they've been upset by Kansas State as a big favorite before. They've been upset by Iowa State as a big favorite before. It happened. They very easily could have lost to Nebraska last year, very easily could have lost to Texas last year. Are they going to win these close games again? So I got Oklahoma at under 9.5 at -110. So I feel pretty good about that.
Man, where do you kind of fall on the scale of, hey, this team had a great year last year? I think about Purdue, for example. I mean, a great season last year, bring back some key pieces. And now all of a sudden that number is in pretty thin air relative to what Purdue's mm-hmm. season win total usually is. Or conversely, a team like Northwestern had a atypical, really down season, disappointing year. The roster didn't show much promise. There was not a lot to really like with what comes back. How do you handle teams that maybe overachieved last year versus teams that underachieved last year when kind of looking and evaluating where they're going to be this upcoming season?
I like to stay away from the overachievers because you just don't know. And I'll use Michigan State as a perfect example. You and I talked about Michigan State, I think, a lot last year on Fridays during our shows. And I took a Michigan State under last year, and they completely overachieved, winning some games that they probably shouldn't have. Miami, or they maybe not that they shouldn't have, but very easily could have lost. And they wound up going to the New Year's Six and winning and having a great year under Mel Tucker. Now, was that just a byproduct of the good fortune in the 50-50 games, or are they going to continue to improve and win those games and continue? Like, that was probably the worst Tucker, that the worst roster that Mel's going to have in East Lansing. So they're going to get better, but at the same time, is the better roster going to develop in time and result in a better record than they had last year? I don't know. So I would rather take an over on an underachiever last year, a team that had an abnormally bad season that, you know, maybe there was an injury involved or something going on off the field, or maybe they lost a bunch of close games. I would rather take my chance on that and having a team which has a little bit more positive regression per se, or more room or a better ceiling to improve, than knowing that now Michigan State go over and they have to win 8 or 9 games. And then you're like rooting every week and you're worried about, okay, is this the week they're going to fall flat, or are they going to do it again? So I'd rather be on the low side and expect improvement from someone that may be underachieved than lay a bigger number with someone who I still might not be sure commands the respect that the season went total as.
Well, I think it's a perfect segue then. We just lived in the Big Ten on the last question, talking about programs that underachieved, that lost so many close games last year. It leads me right into Nebraska. And sure enough, I look at the season win total. I'm hoping it's at 5.5 or so. I'm like, I'm going to fire the over. That's a lock, hammer,
no shot,
whatever. And now they're sitting here at 7.5. So that's a 4.5 win improvement off of last year's team. I mean, how can you possibly take the over, even though if I had to play it, I'd probably lean in that direction?
And that's exactly right, because we've talked about Nebraska at length, and they are a team that last year, like I said, were they very easily could have beaten Oklahoma, very easily could have beaten Michigan, very easily could have beaten Michigan State. But they have had a way under Scott Frost, a knack of just finding ways to lose games. Now you have a new quarterback. You have some new positions on the coaching staff being occupied. And you're right, though. Like, you want to play the over. And I found 7 out there as well, which opens up a push scenario as well. But, like, there is reason. Like, if you look at – again, people are going to overreact to what I'm saying now. If you look at Nebraska's schedule and they beat Oklahoma, and they'll be a field goal underdog maybe at home in Lincoln, they're going to be 5-0. Then they have Rutgers on the road. Who knows? And like, there's a really good chance that they could be undefeated hosting Minnesota or before they go to Michigan for the final 3 games of the year. Now, is that going to happen? Probably not, because Nebraska has found a way to just always lose games. And I think maybe we're over reacting and overhyping them because we think it's finally going to happen. But I'm with you. If I had to play a side on Nebraska, I would play over, because I think there is talent on that roster. I'm actually happy that Scott Frost is still there. I'm glad they gave him another year and an opportunity to write this, because honestly, if he can't do it, I don't know where they turn.
Yeah, I mean, the NIL and everything should help them, but I'm bullish on Nebraska this year. But 8, that's a tough pill to swallow. Another team that underachieved last year, but was so close in so many games, and it's almost gut wrenching to see how they lost games, is Auburn. And here we are sitting here in July, and their win totals at 6. And they were 6 last year and lost their starting quarterback with a broken leg against Mississippi State. I don't see how this team doesn't get off to at least a 2-0 start. You beat Penn State at home, where they'll probably be favored. That's a 3-0 start. You have Missouri, and then you have LSU at your place sitting at 4-0 potentially. They could easily get off to a 5-0 start. Now, it's a gauntlet in the back half, but Auburn to me is a team that I think flies past the over at 6. I think 8 wins is within reason. I really do, if they can figure out the quarterback position.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you'll look at the schedule and there's a really good chance they go 0 for the road. But still, even if they go 0 for the road, you're looking at 8 and you've got a couple of wiggle room games at home. And basically, if you're essentially saying that if you can beat one of Penn State, LSU, or A&M at home, you're going to go over. So I like that play, and I think I think last year, I think maybe some of the disappointments and the record was a little bit of a result of all the things that maybe were going on off the field and talk about Brian Harsin. Is he going to get fired? He's not vaccinated, and is this going to be his the date that they had? I think there's always seems to be stuff with Auburn off the field surrounding the program. And I think what happened this offseason now, Harsin's the head coach. Some guys are gone. Some players are gone. You bring in some new players. I think that is a little bit of an energy jolt, and it provides the program a little bit more of some solid footing. And I think they'll be better off for it. So, yeah, I would go over 6 with Auburn because, again, like I said, even if you go over the road, you pull – You beat one of 3 LSU, Penn State, or A&M. At the very least, you're going to push, and there's a good chance I think you could potentially beat 2 of those 3.
Well, I've given you a couple that I like, so I'm giving away all my tips. Why don't you tell me? You already referenced the fact that you like Oklahoma under 9.5, Georgia over 10.5 if you can get it. Obviously, Bear's the only person in the world that can get 10.5 on Georgia and Ohio State, but he got it. Hey, he must know people.
You just got to be quick to the trigger and quick on that keypad when they post him. I got it to DraftKings. I can send proof of receipt if nobody believes me.
There you go. Hey, a pro's going to pro. I understand that. Are there any others right now that you see that you just feel like you need to jump at?
Yeah, there were 2. I got Georgia Tech under 3.5 at plus money, which I feel really good about that. I mean, this is a team, like, I don't know how you're going to win games. You look at their non-conference schedule, and it's UCF, Georgia. I think they have Ole Miss. It's a non-conference schedule that it's almost like the AD was like, okay, we want to fire our head coach, so this is going to be the schedule that we're going to put together with Jahmyr Gibbs now gone, their best offensive player. You look at the schedule, like the only game you could say like you beat Duke at home, like it just doesn't look like a very favorable. So I'm sure they'll find a couple of wins somewhere, but if they have to win 4 to beat me, I'm totally fine with that. So I took Georgia Tech under 3.5, and I took South Florida under 4.5. I know they brought in Jerry Bohannon, and I know they've got a bunch of returning starters, but they were terrible last year. They beat Temple, who was the worst team in the conference last year, and they beat Florida A&M. The defense was horrific, and they too have a non-conference schedule where it's like Florida, Louisville, there's someone else really good that I maybe it's Kentucky. Like there are teams on that schedule that they're just not going to beat. So and the schedule, the conference schedule breaks down, like they're going to go 0 for the road. So like they're going to have to like beat UCF at home or Tulsa in order to potentially like even hit 4. So I don't think USF is getting to 5. So I took USF under 4.5. So those are the ones that I've sent in.
It feels
so
like the group of 5, there is a lot of value. And maybe, you know, it's because people don't know as much about the teams, not as familiar with some of the teams. Mm-hmm. But it feels like as you kind of survey the group of 5 landscape, I feel like there's a ton of opportunity out there. One that I really, really liked was Louisiana under 8.5. Now, it's not because there's not talent on the roster. There mm-hmm. is. But for a team to have reeled off 13 in a row or however many they won in a row to finish the season, how is ridiculous the way they finished the season. And then to lose all the pieces that they lose. You lose key playmakers, you lose quarterback, you lose your coach, you lose your best offensive lineman. You lose a lot. And now you're sitting here expected to get, I think, in what is arguably the most difficult group of 5 conference this year. That's no disrespect to the American or the Mountain West. Both, I think, are excellent. But the Sun Belt is stout. For them to get to 9 wins to tear up a losing ticket, to me is very difficult to envision. So I'm leaning on the Cajuns on the under with Louisiana at 8.5.
Yeah, they were a very senior-laden team, a lot of upperclassmen, and like you say, with the coach and those players gone, and you would expect a team like maybe Western Kentucky, South Alabama. There are teams that are actually Western Kentucky's in Houston now, so I apologize. I got my conferences wrong, but I think there are some teams in the Sun Belt that could give them problems. And there was one other team that I'm kind of on the fence about, and that's Utah State. Like they won more games last year, coming from behind at halftime than anybody in the country, and I almost wonder if that was a situation last year where Blake Anderson, the first-year head coach, kind of took the league by surprise. He had some transfers. He had Logan Bonner, his quarterback, who he had at Arkansas State. He brings them in, runs that offense, and kind of surprised the league. And maybe like the second time around, they might be a little more up to speed on slowing them down. I think their win total was somewhere around 7.5. And I thought going under was probably the way to go because you also – on the non-conference side, you pick up Alabama as a non-conference game. So that's a loss. You already lost to BYU and Boise State last year, and you've got those two teams on the schedule again. So are you going to have a bunch of second-half comebacks like you did last year? I don't know. So Utah State's another one that I'm kind of on the fence about. I haven't sent in under 7.5 yet.
It's at 6.5 now, Bear. So if you see it at 7.5, you better rock and roll because it's 6.5 for Utah State, which to me, you can't take the over because I mean, it's an 11 win team last year. You know, it's like, how can you, I just can't wait. They got to win seven. That's a no brainer. No, not so fast, my friend. Last one, Bear.
And you did that bowl game last year.
That was a good team last year. They had some talent on the perimeter. They were stout on defense. They could get after the passer. Like that was a good Utah State team. So I think they're solid, but that's a difficult league. Like we talked about, I think Air Force will be good. I think Boise will be good. San Diego State will be solid. Fresno's a handful. Mountain West to me is very, very solid from top to bottom. One other one that I want to ask you about, because I think this is a hammer. I love the overreaction to late coach movement. I remember back a couple years ago, 5-6 years ago, when Lincoln Riley took over in June after Bob Stoops decided to abruptly step down. Everyone's like, oh, well, there you go. Cancel the season for the Sooners. Well, they go and maybe have the best season of Lincoln Riley's tenure in 2017 when they give Georgia all they want in the semifinal game out there in the Rose Bowl. UAB to me is the play. UAB sitting at 7.5. It's already steamed down from 8.5 all because Bill Clark abruptly retires. But you look at the roster, what comes back. Conference USA is gettable. I'm not saying it's bad at all. I think Conference USA is rock solid, but I definitely lean in favor of UAB pulling it off. You know, them and UTSA, I think, are the 1-2 punch to potentially get it done. So to keep it over 8 wins, UAB's been averaging that, it feels like, for the last couple of years. So I have no idea how this number's so low, but I think it's just overreaction to the coach deciding to step down in the middle of the summer.
I do too, and I would agree with you on that side. Bill Clark built the program. I mean, the players aren't going anywhere. Bill Clark's coaching staff is there, so like they're really. I mean, yes, the head coach is different, but everything else is the same. And is Bill Clark worth a 1.5? Just his presence for in-game decisions. Not is that. Like, is that the value that you put on that? I don't know, but 8 seems a little low. I'm glad you mentioned UTSA, by the way, because that was one of the week one games that I was kind of looking at. Like, Houston is only a 4.5 point favorite in that game against UTSA. I know, look, you and I have made a ton of money on the road running the last couple of years, but you lose Sincere McCormick. There's some other guys that are gone. They had a bunch of close games go their way last year. I think Houston could, like, Cincinnati was a team that everybody wound up talking about for the college football playoff last year and ultimately getting there. I think Houston could wind up being the uh, be the best team in the American this year. And I thought 4.5 was a little light there with some of those offensive weapons.
About my Houston Cougars. All right. That's my secret team, dark horse team. Like, everyone's still talking about Cincinnati. They're going to give Arkansas a game week one. I don't see it. I think Cincinnati takes a decent size step back. Doesn't mean they're going to be bad. They'll probably still win 9-10 games. But I mean, I think Houston is the team. They circle that one, Bear. That's them and TCU are my two sleepers this year that nobody's talking about.
Do not steal my horned frogs, Bear.
Don't you dare do it. Don't do it.
I already got him at 20-1 to win the Big 12.
That's what they were. Wow.
Yeah, bet down. I think I have 18.
Well, they saw like you walk into the window. He said, better adjust the price. Yeah. Let's go. No, TCU, and we'll talk about this a little bit more. But I like TCU a lot this year.
Okay. All right. Okay. So do I.
But we can get into it. But there's Chandler Morris, Max Duggan at quarterback, Sonny Dykes coming in.
Oh, no. I think you and I both like Gary a lot. But sometimes doesn't stale. A program just get a little stale and maybe players just kind of check out? I had a feeling that's kind of what happened at TCU the last couple of years. And I think you talked about like an overreaction to like a coach leaving. Like, is there a little bit, I think, maybe an overreaction of like Evans leaving as well? Like, he didn't play a majority of last year anyway. He was hurt. I think they liked the backs. I remember we did the Oklahoma game last year, and they felt pretty good about the backs that they were going to have behind Evans. And Chandler Morris is there, and Duggan is there. Whoever winds up winning that quarterback, Quentin Johnson's one of the best wide receivers in the country, and probably not a whole lot of people really realize his name. I think the way that schedule sets up, I think TCU could be a real – now, it could go either way. I mean, we know Sonny doesn't help his coordinators out, and they're up big, and he's going to be a hindrance to his defense. But at the same time, I mean, they could outscore nearly every team.
There's no doubt about it, man. Hey, don't you take – that's my team, all right? You don't try to steal my teams, okay? Houston and TCU, you just stay away. You could pick another team, all right? Bear, great stuff, buddy. We'll continue to do this. We'll hit some conference previews. We'll hit some long shot odds, player of the year odds, Heisman odds. We'll hit all those in the weeks to come, man. But we love you. We appreciate you. We look forward to doing this on a weekly basis moving forward here on Always College Football.
Absolutely. Right. As do I. As do I. Look forward to having a
all right, you keep Stanford Steve in check, man. Huh? All right, see you, buddy.
I will.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, here you go. It's time to do one of our favorite segments. It's time to dial in to our mailbag. All right, Coops, let's get underway. How are we looking?
Looking good, McElroy. First one's from Peter in Dallas. The Aggies have a ton of young talent, and Jimbo's program is poised to compete at a high level for the foreseeable future. Can they start that this year, and is there a long shot for A&M to be the best team in the West in 2022?
Well, saying there's a chance. Not like Lloyd Christmas where, hey, one in a million, there's a chance in Dumb and Dumber. No, I actually think that there's a chance, but I think they're a year away. Look, I'd always rather have talent over experience. Experience and talent together, beautiful combination. But if I had to choose one or the other, experience or talent, give me talent every day of the week. The Aggies have that. I'm not that concerned with the youth because of the positions that they're likely to step into. Along the defensive line in particular, you can play early along the defensive line. However, that even if you're relying on some of those game-changing players that they just brought in from this class, there might be a misstep or two or a game or two in which they're just not up to speed. With freshmen playing impactful positions, it's a little bit like a roller coaster. They'll make some great plays. They'll also make some boneheaded plays. The goal for the Aggies this year with new defensive coordinator DJ Durkin, don't allow the boneheaded plays to overcome or become critical when it comes to them being able to win the football game. I think 2023 is the more likely year for them to really surge. When you look at what Alabama brings back, you look at what the rest of the division looks like, A&M is certainly poised to challenge for the top spot. I like what they have at quarterback. I think they'll be fine offensively. I'd like for another receiver to emerge in addition to Anaya Smith. And I'd like very much to know that Devon Achane, who I think is a legit Heisman sleeper, I'd like to know for sure exactly how many touches he's going to get on a game-to-game basis. So there's some question marks on offense. I think they'll be fine, but the big question marks reside on defense. Can they adequately replace some of the leadership that they lost in the front seven defensively from last year's team? They'll have the talent to do so. It's just, will they play with the consistency that last year's group lacked in order to really contend in the division?
All right, we got another one from Minnesota. This is Molly in Minnesota. Paul Christ has been so consistent at Wisconsin. No losing seasons, 6-1 in bowl games, and again, favored to win the Big Ten West this year. What do the Badgers have to do to get over the hump and win the Big Ten championship for the first time since 2012?
Well, it's funny to me, Coops, and I was kind of, I guess I'd just forgotten, or I have selective memory, or I'm a prisoner of the moment, probably one of the three. I forgot that they'd gotten off to a 1-3 start last year until I dove back in earlier this summer. And I'm sitting there looking, I'm like, well, they weren't that far away in the Notre Dame game. It got ugly late. They played poorly in the Michigan game. They, of course, lost the opener. So a 1-3 start, and then they rallied to win their 8 of their last 9 games. So I think they obviously carry over some momentum into this season, but it's not to say that you can look back and feel great about what they did last year. I thought in a lot of ways it was somewhat disappointing. I'm ready for Graham Mertz to take the next step. You bring in a new offensive coordinator in Bobby Engram. He comes over from the Baltimore Ravens. Remember, Bobby Engram was a former NFL wide receiver and has spent time now coaching both wide receivers and tight ends at the highest level of football. So what does that lead me to believe? It makes me think they're going to feature their wide receivers by moving them around and having them in less predictable places than they've had in years before. So he has two, I think, huge things that he needs to do offensively. They have to get the best out of Graham Mertz. He's got to quit turning the football over. If he doesn't stop turning the football over, they're still going to lose games they shouldn't. And when you're looking at Wisconsin, you're trying to win the Big Ten, you cannot give the opponent extra possessions and you cannot give them field position by giving them the short field by turning it over. That's one. Two, how do you maximize the skill set of each individual player by creating favorable matchups? Wisconsin's going to be able to pound the football. They have a three-headed monster at running back. I feel great about what Braylon Allen's going to do this year. I think he's poised to have a huge season, but is going to split the carries amongst a couple other guys there in the backfield. I think they'll be pretty good along the line of scrimmage with the new offensive line coach. I'm not going to lose a lot of sleep over that. But I don't think you can win the Big Ten right now with where the Big Ten's gone, scoring less than 26 points a game. It was important, I think, to go to the league, find a capable, young, innovative offensive coordinator in Bobby Engram, and hopefully now, moving into this season, they'll open things up, which will bring out the best in Graham Mertz and bring out the best in each individual skill player that's on that Wisconsin team. So they'll play great defense, they'll pound the football, but can they score if, in fact, it becomes a shootout with the likes of Ohio State and some of the other teams that can really put points on the board?
All right. Wow. Surprise bonus question coming up here. I don't know if you saw this. Notre Dame football released a video showcasing the Shamrock Series uniforms where they're out in Vegas playing BYU. Simple question, Mark and Charlotte. Is Notre Dame cool?
Mark and Charlotte. Mark Kubiak and Charlotte, perhaps? Is that where this question's coming from? I don't know. I'll have to check alwayscollegefootball@gmail.com. Notre Dame's always been cool, but I'm a traditionalist. So, you know, I mean, to me, like, the more tradition and history that you have, the cooler that you are. I mean, I grew up watching Rudy. I thought Notre Dame was like the coolest thing ever when I was 10 years old. And I know, look, whether you like Rudy, dislike Rudy, whatever, it doesn't matter. Notre Dame was like the destination, you know, for us that were children of the 90s. So yes, Notre Dame is cool. However, what I would say is those uniforms are not cool. When you have a traditional kit like Notre Dame, like Penn State, like Alabama, like USC, like Oklahoma, like Michigan, I don't want you to mess with it. Like, I remember a time when Oregon, and I know that's their thing, right? Like, Oregon wants to play and have all the different uniform combinations, and that was like a huge deal back in the early 2010s, is look at the swag and look at the uniforms, and we have a million different uniform combos. That's great. They played in the national championship game and didn't wear a color that I recognize or associate with Oregon. They wore white and silver. When I see white and silver, I think about the Oakland Raiders. I don't think about the Oregon Ducks or the Las Vegas Raiders or whatever. So, I mean, like, I want you to be recognizable. And when you start going icy white uniforms with gold trim, that's not recognizable. And that's not synonymous with Notre Dame. I want to see navy. I want to see gold. I want to see gold breeches, gold helmets, traditional white uniforms with the Notre Dame patch on either side. That's what I want to see. Call me old fashioned. Say I'm an old man yelling at a cloud. I'll live with that. But I want Notre Dame to look like Notre Dame. And unfortunately, in the Shamrock Series uniforms, they've gotten a little bit crazy with me over the years. And this one's no different.
It's fair. It's fair. They're pretty sweet, though. I like them. All right. Randy in Oklahoma. Many would say it's been a long time coming for Brent Venables to get a head coaching job. Should expectations be higher for him than other first-year head coaches, given the championship-winning experience he got at Clemson?
It's one of those situations where he was patient. He waited for the right opportunity to present itself, a place that has great alignment with a great athletic support staff, with a great administration. Joe Castiglione, the athletic director at Oklahoma, does an amazing job of providing resources, not just the football program, but you name it. I mean, they're great in softball. They're great in gymnastics. They're great in so many different sports, great in baseball this past year. So there's everything that you could possibly want at Oklahoma to be successful. But we can't tell you right now without a shadow of a doubt that Brent Venables is going to be a phenomenal head coach. I don't know that. I've never seen it. I assume he will be. But it's the same situation that we had with Kirby Smart when he took over from Alabama and headed to Georgia there in 2016. I wasn't sure what we were going to get. I was optimistic. I was cautiously optimistic. But I didn't know if Kirby Smart was going to translate and become an elite head coach. Ultimately, he has. But we've seen several elite coordinators go on to become head coaches, and it doesn't quite work out. I do think because of his familiarity with Oklahoma and the way the fan base has really rallied behind him, that's beneficial. Plus, the pending move to the SEC has generated some excitement and some buzz for Oklahoma on the recruiting trail. So there's a lot, I think, of momentum for the Sooners moving forward. But in year number one, there's just too many unknowns. A ton of turnover on the roster. Obviously, massive turnover on the staff. You bring in Dylan Gabriel along with Jeff Lebby, who's your offensive coordinator. I think those two have worked together seamlessly in the past at UCF. So I think that offensive side of the football will be really solid. But what about the defense? Will they be able to take significant strides from year number, what, 4, 5, 6 for Lincoln Riley to now year number one in Brent Venables' system? It's a little bit different system. So I think that there might be some growing pains on that side of the ball. Oklahoma will be really good, but I think the Big 12 is so wide open. And if they make it to the Big 12 championship game, I would consider that to be a very successful season in year number one for Brent Venables. Playoff would be great. Winning a game in the playoff would be even better. But just getting to the Big 12 championship game, I think, should be the ultimate goal so far, at least in year number one for Venables. Hey, great to interact with all of you guys. It was terrific to get some of your questions. Please continue submitting your questions for the mailbag. We'll get to them, I promise. We have a long list of questions that have been submitted, and we're checking them off one by one. You can hit us up at Always College Football on Instagram or on Twitter, and you can also hit us up in our email at alwayscollegefootball@gmail.com. So please interact with us and we'll get to your questions as soon as we can. Look, we're going to get you prepped. Don't worry. We will hit your team before the season gets underway just 31 days from now, 24 days. No. Not that many days from now. All right. We appreciate you being with us. Please like, rate, and subscribe. It helps the show. Hit us up with any feedback that you might have in the comment section on the YouTube page. So we look forward to our interactions with you. We're going to change the show. We're going to adjust the show to however it is that you want us to adjust the show. This show is for you, the fan. We're fans too. So we'll be with you every step of the way here. For all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark Kubiak, I'm Greg McElroy. Hope you have a wonderful day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.